Jerko ready for it. Into center. Base hit, Jed Jerko. Bam. Generates that run. Hustling down the line. Stealing second base and scoring the first run. It's 1-0. Round ball hit to second. Long to the plate. Out at the plate. Out at the plate. In one of the biggest plays of the night, Wong a strike to Molina. The 2-2. Struck him out! Rosenthal comes in and shuts the door here in the eighth. Second and third, nobody out. Diamondbacks held off the scoreboard.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400, WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news, along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us. 65 degrees at 9:01. It's going to be a beautiful weekend in East Central Illinois. Temperatures around 80 degrees all weekend. No rain showers. Get outside while you can. It's almost August, so definitely enjoy this weather. Thanks for joining us once again. 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. 351-5357. Listen live at WDWS.com. Those highlights courtesy of Fox Sports Midwest and a really amazing finish to the Cardinals game last night. Lauren, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Just so much going on. We got basketball for you. We got baseball for you. We got football. We got tennis. Alec Vukic is playing at noon today or the championship over on campus. And we got North Carolina talk. We got Saban talk. Malcolm Hill talk. What do you got there?
This is my headlines rundown that I do every week.
You got a whole page of them.
And what font, what size font do you think that is?
That's under six.
That is just 6.5.
You is it?
Okay. 6.5. And it's very hard to read. I should have brought my glasses in studio. But it's just the number of things that are going on professionally and in college.
Well, you know, people can't get enough basketball recruiting, right?
Oh, yeah.
What did Sumu do last night?
Well, he's a priority Illinois target, of course, if Illini
fans
are
aware. He's getting too good.
He is getting better and better. And the word continues to be, you know, scouts reporting that the two teams that are in this, Xavier and Illinois, and Illinois is all over him. He's from Morgan Park. He plays for Mac Urban Fire.
But Self was there watching last night.
Yes.
Big time coach. This guy is big time. 42 points in the AAU game last night.
Not only 42 points, Lauren, but he was 16 of 21 from the field. That's incredibly efficient. I just watched a minute 14 second highlight package before we came in here. And it was he was getting to the rim, not just breakaways. He was getting to the rim with a set defense. He was getting layups. He was getting dunks. And he had 8 assists as well and 7 rebounds.
I keep telling you, that's why they didn't take Charlie Moore.
Yeah, and you've said that on a repeated basis.
They're going to get him, but now he's getting so good that you're going to get the Kentuckys involved. You're going to get – everybody's going to be involved. He could go anywhere he wants.
I forgot who said it, so forgive me, but and who cares how many stars he is? Like, he's really, really good. I don't care if he's 3 stars or if he's 10 stars. He's really, really good.
Yeah.
And he is a 5 star. He was a 4 star, he's a 5 star, then dropped to a 4, but now he's back up to a 4, or back up to a 5, so we'll see how things go for Ayo Dosunmu. But just a monster of a game last night. Former Illini Malcolm Hill had 28 points and 11 rebounds. We'll hear from him later in the show, his first game over in the Philippines, and so great to see that. But training camp starts on Monday. I don't really know where you want to begin.
I don't either.
Let's do the guest lineup. Why don't we just start there, and then we'll work our way through it. Our good friend Tom Deanhart, Big Ten Media Days was this week. He's going to join us, come up just after 9:10 this morning and get his thoughts on the Big Ten Conference and see where he thinks the Illini are going to finish up in Season 2 under Lovie Smith. And you mentioned Illini tennis player playing in a match today. It's not with the Illini tennis team, of course. This is the offseason. Brad Dancer is going to join us at 9:45 to chat about that. Then our good friend Will Leach will join us, senior writer Sports on Earth. He's going to join us at 10, big-time Cardinals fan from Mattoon, Deadspin founder. Always fun to talk to him.
His reading on North Carolina. I think that's really interesting.
You wrote a bit calm about that today.
Yeah, that fascinates me because it's such a big deal. So many people are, you know, you mentioned that Illinois is interested. Hey, the whole nation's interested in this because how is the NCAA going to treat North Carolina in this situation where they cheated for 18 years? I mean, just the last 2 years, they won a championship and finished second in the NCAA basketball, and plus their football's a lot better. And you just wonder if all this cheating in the classroom is why. I mean, it certainly helps when you can get students through without having to go to class.
I've been keeping the Associated Press stories on the academic scandal at UNC, and now I've decided to create a folder because the number of stories, just so I can – some of them are maybe repetitive, but it's just so I, you know, have background on what's been going on. Of course, I read some of the guys who cover the North Carolina team and just trying to stay on top of this. And I think a lot of people out, you know, outside of UNC and Illinois fans, I think there are a lot of people that are watching this to see what the NCAA does. And, you know, you put this in your column about what the NCAA said. It is their business.
Yeah.
And these classes are, because you're creating a class that kids don't even have to go to. It doesn't matter that it's for other students as well.
I thought it was really interesting. One of the things that came out was the point where the counselor spoke to the football staff, explaining to them what the students had to do in the class, which was nothing.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. They could sleep during class.
Like the coaches didn't know about it, right?
Yeah, of course they did.
Yeah, of course.
Well, whatever. Just like Repetino didn't know about the...
Look out now. Yeah. You might be in trouble on that one.
Yeah, I know.
He might not have known.
I know.
If I'm the assistant coach, I'm not going to let him know. I might be doing...
It's the
I'm gonna
basketball
do
dorm, though.
Well, I know.
It's his dorm.
Yeah, but he doesn't go there.
No, but doesn't he have someone watching that dorm?
Yes, yeah, the assistant coach.
That's true. That's a great point.
Who knows?
Yeah,
he swears up and down he didn't know about it, and I just think he probably didn't. But look, there's a lot of things that go on cheating in basketball that the head coach doesn't know. You can't let the head coach know everything.
They'd
shut it off. Look, if you're making, let's say you're making $5 million, okay? I want to protect that $5
million. Yeah.
I don't want to get fired. I don't want to lose my job. I mean, I'm going to basically, if something's going to be, I'm going to make sure that I'm not involved. You can do whatever you want. Don't tell me about it. Keep me out of this thing.
But at the same time, Lauren, it's you're in charge of the program, and if it's anybody else, if it's you, the coach of Louisville, and let's say you've been coaching college basketball for a while, you're fired if you're not Rick Pitino, who's got championships and Final Fours on his
That's
resume.
Right.
That's why he's not getting fired. He's got a fantastic AD, one of the best in the country, and Tom Jurich.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really good AD. But the only reason Rick Pitino isn't being fired for this scandal, because he's Rick Pitino.
Well, that's probably true.
If John Gross would have been the head coach of Louisville when this was going on, he would have been fired the second it came out last year. Rick Pitino still has his job. Let's take a quick phone call here, and then we'll get Tom Dienhardt in, and we'll get to his thoughts on the Big Ten. Who's going to win the East? Is Penn State going to continue their run from last year? Benny, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Michael. Morning, Lauren. How are you both doing?
Good.
Lauren, I wanted to ask you, I didn't get to watch Big Ten Media Day, and I missed your coverage on Monday. I had to work, so I just wondered... The three questions I wanted to ask you. What did Urban Meyer say during his press conference? You know, what was his overall outlook, you know, for the season? And the other thing I was wondering, what about P.J. Fleck? What was his outlook for the season? And the other thing I wanted to ask you about P.J. Fleck was, see, a friend of mine has the internet, and when P.J. Fleck took the Minnesota job, that the players that had committed to him all had left and came and joined him at Minnesota. Now, that, there's nothing wrong with that, is there? I mean, that's not a NCAA violation, is it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, it's questionable whether you should take people with you. I think he took about a half a dozen with him. I think at one point there were like eight that had indicated they might be moving, but I don't know how many finally did come. I think it probably was around six, but I'm not sure.
All right, I was just curious about that.
All right, thanks, Benny.
I like the guy's enthusiasm. You know, he's really got a lot of enthusiasm. I think he'll do well in the Big Ten.
All right, Benny, we got to run. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks you.
Bye. Coming up next, Tom Dienhardt of the Big Ten Network. We'll hear from him here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. That's Lovie Smith at Big Ten Media Days earlier this week. Now joining us, our good friend Tom Dienhardt. Give him a follow on Twitter at BTN Tom Dienhardt. Tom, good morning. How are you?
Doing good, guys. Our BTN bus tour will start later this week, so I'm about ready to hit the road for almost 2.5 weeks visiting every Big Ten training camp. So I'm looking forward to it.
When are you going to be in Champaign?
I don't know the date yet. The West Division is on the second leg of our tour, so it'll be at least over a week or so away before we get to Illinois. I think it's one of our last stops. I know Northwestern's last, so I'm guessing maybe Illinois second to the last.
Well, everybody at Big Ten Media Day is always optimistic and excited for the season, but obviously teams stand out and what teams are going to be there at the end of the season, and not every team's going to get very many. Some teams aren't going to win very many games, but in the West Division, that's a stick there. Wisconsin's probably going to be right at the top, and it could be a struggle for Illinois to really compete in Lovie Smith's second year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You're right about Wisconsin, too. To me, they're the heavy favorite in the West. The schedule is very advantageous. I know they have to go to BYU in the non-conference. Toughest conference game is probably at Nebraska. Although Michigan comes to Madison, but still, I like the Badgers a lot. Again, that schedule and the personnel too, guys. It's going to be a vintage offense. The key there is going to be the quarterback, Alex Hornibrook, how he continues to develop. So I think everybody's chasing the Badgers, but I'm eager to see what Nebraska's got. A big year for Mike Riley out in Lincoln. And then Iowa, this is one of those years where everybody's sort of overlooking Iowa. And those always tend to be the years when the Hawkeyes surprise everybody.
Well, let's talk about Illinois a little bit, Tom. What's your take from what you heard from Lovie?
A lot of unknowns, Lauren. Beginning at quarterback, right? I mean, that's a position that still has to stabilize. Then I wonder about the offensive line, which hasn't been a strength, seems like, for years. And defensively, guys, the front seven, what a concern. Lost a lot of good players on their defensive line, and the linebacking core is really being rehabbed. So I'll tell you what, if you have questions up front in the trenches, it's not good, because we all know that's where football games are won and lost.
Well, did you get any idea that maybe he's got some people coming up? I mean, they do have. I think what they have, Tom, is barely enough, and then you worry about depth. And when you get into the late season, that really becomes a factor. Nobody keeps all their players the whole season. Almost nobody.
Yeah, that always is what separates the haves from the have-nots in any conference, is the depth. The starters for Illinois should be solid, but like you said, we all know there's going to be injuries. Players get worn down, and then your depth gets tested. So that's probably going to be what undoes Illinois at some point. Probably a battle between Illinois and Purdue to see who can avoid the Big Ten West cellar this year. But who knows? Maybe there'll be some surprises there. Like I said earlier, I like Wisconsin a lot, but it's not like there's a bunch of 10,000-pound gorillas in the Big Ten West. So there's always a chance to win some ball games, I think.
No, I think if you look at, let's say you take Indiana and Purdue, the fact that Indiana's in the East and Purdue's in the West is a big difference for Indiana, because they've had some pretty good football teams, but look who they're going up against. Do you see any changes ever taking place again in the divisions? They've made one switch from leaders and legends to the geographical. Mm-hmm. Are we set in stone on this now?
I think we are for now. I think the only way there's change if there's expansion of some sort. And if that takes place, I think it's still, 4, 5, 6 years away. Who knows, maybe even farther. Some people have discussed maybe moving Michigan State to the West and put Purdue in the East. But, again, from everything you hear publicly from the conference, there's no real movement afoot to try to massage those divisions at all.
Did you know that last year that they actually broke even in games played against each other?
I didn't realize that. That's interesting to know.
Yeah, they're 50-50. Now, in the championship game, that gave the East the edge, because Penn State edged, as you know, came back from a 28-7 deficit and beat won the game over Wisconsin by, 38-31. A great finish for them, but I was really surprised, because Rutgers lost all three. I mean, there was Michigan State had a down year, and the teams wound up 50-50 in actual games played against each other. So maybe that's
interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's misleading. I think
it is. Well, I think you know, we'll see. I just don't know if the West is ever going to be able to really keep pace. I mean, you know, the head-to-head matchups in the course of a year, they go 500, that's all well and good. I guess the real proof is in who wins the championships, right? Who makes the college football playoff? And we'll see if the Big Ten West does, the team from the Big Ten West does that anytime soon. If you look at the preseason polls, Ohio State and Penn State are our top 10 teams right there. You still have Michigan, which is always going to be competitive and have a lot of talent too. And again, Michigan State fell off the map a little bit, but still, when you have a big three of Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan guys, boy, it's going to be hard for the Big Ten West to match that consistently from year to year.
Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network. Give him a follow on Twitter at BTN Tom Deanhart. Tom, we go back to the defensive line, and they did lose a lot, but they got some experience from a couple of freshmen last year, especially Kenyon Jackson and Jamal Milan. They got some freshmen coming in, but it's always an adjustment period. But that experience probably helped those two greatly to have some guys who contributed and actually contributed on a pretty good basis last year.
Yeah, anytime you can get your feet wet and start getting guys acclimated at a young age, that's got to help you for the future. So there's no doubt they've got some promising youngsters up front. What they signed, a junior college linebacker, I believe, too.
Delshawn Phillips.
That should help. Yeah. So, you know, Hardy Nickerson's got some players to work with up front. So it's going to be a work in progress. And, you know, like I said, Illinois, I know they're investing in the facilities there too, so that'll certainly help with future recruiting efforts, you'd like to think.
Well, that recruiting class sits at 9, I believe. They had a big barbecue last night on campus with several top players in town. But any concerns from you with that recruiting class at 9 right now? Or there's still plenty of time to go, of course.
There's plenty of time at this point. 9 is probably a nice number to have for early commitments as you're starting to head into the season here. You know, you don't want to fill up too much at this point, and you want to make sure the commitments you have are solid ones. So I think with 9 verbals at this point, you know, Illinois fans would have to be pleased with that number.
Well, I kept a tweet from you earlier this year, and this is before the February signing class of this year, where Western Michigan was ranked ahead of Illinois in the recruiting class, 64 to 68 in terms of ranking. Of course, then Illinois in February had the recruiting class that was ranked in the top 40 in the country. Do you see Loving being, you know, able to build on that and just it seems like he's got a plan in place, and you know, some Atlanta fans are somewhat worried, but he seems like he's very stable and he knows what's going on here, and the talent evaluation of the players is going to be key for them.
Yeah, you know, Illinois is never going to sign a bunch of 4- and 5-star recruits. They may get a guy like that here or there on occasion, so it's always going to probably be a developmental program with mostly 3-star players. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, look what Michigan State's done with those type of classes under Mark D'Antonio. You know, you eyeball guys who fit what you want to do and develop them. So I think that's got to be Illinois' M.O. And, you know, the early returns on Lovie Smith have been solid from a recruiting standpoint. I think at some point, you know, you have to start tangibly showing some results on the field to recruits, too. You know, I mentioned the recent announcement to improve the facilities there. That's going to help Illinois' recruiting efforts as well. So there's always a series of things that can help you with your recruiting. Obviously, like I said, on the field, your investment in facilities as well. And Illinois has made some moves in the right direction to try to continue to enhance the all-important recruiting game.
Hey, Tom, I'm going to switch you over. Jim Delaney just seems to me to be the number one guy in amateur athletics in this country. I don't know what you think, but I don't think since he's your boss, I don't expect you to say anything bad. I mean, this isn't the White House, after all. But
look out, Tom.
But what are your thoughts about Delaney? How much longer do you think? I get the idea that he won't be around when the next negotiations come around, but that's several years down the road. What's his future, do you think?
I think you're probably right. No, they're starting a new television contract this fall, headed by the agreement with Fox, and I think it's a 5- or 6-year agreement. So you're right, Lorne. I guess I'd be surprised if he's around for the next television contract. So I could be wrong. This is pure speculation and conjecture on my behalf. But again,
Dean Hart says Delaney to retire. How's that for a headline?
Yeah, boy, I think I get some phone calls pretty quick.
But, you'd be retiring too.
Goodbye, Tom.
I'll be wearing an orange basket at Home Depot.
But the guy is just a wonder to me. I mean, what's it like to work for the guy?
He's in good shape. I always say, I always think back to that movie about Enron, the smartest guys in the room. And
right.
Whenever I'm with Jim Delaney, I always get the impression there's no doubt he's the smartest guy in the room. And if I was in negotiations, I'd want him seated on my side of the table. So very smart, Lauren. You're right about his power in amateur athletics. Without a doubt, he's the most powerful person in collegiate sports. He's been the commissioner since 1989, if you can believe it. Look at what's gone on in the Big Ten since 1989.
You're not kidding.
And the growth of that conference, the growth. And, you know, he has a big part in college sports across the spectrum as far as helping shape policy.
Yeah.
Smart guy and a hard worker. He's still in good shape. Still has a passion for what he does, too. So, you know, maybe this is the guy who's got another 10 years in him. Who knows? The fascinating question is, when he does step down, who would try to fill those shoes?
Yeah, well, I got an idea, but I'm not going to... I'm not going to mention Jim Phillips.
but yeah, I love that guy. I mean,
I'm not going to mention any names. But
he's a guy who holds some high power spots in the NCAA.
I noticed
media,
that.
And I know he's an Illinois guy, and anybody who's met him comes away very impressed, myself included. Great personality and a smart guy.
Yeah, I think he's a real leader up there. He's got a lot of facilities coming in football and basketball at Northwestern. Now, Delaney has, as you mentioned, has signed a new contract with Fox. I think it runs 6 years, if I remember correctly. What do you think will be the status of cable and just television in general, ESPN and Fox? In 6 years, will the numbers, will we be able to sustain these incredible increases from year to year?
Yeah, that's what's fascinating for me and a lot of people. What television is going to continue to look like and evolve into 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now, with all the streaming, becoming more of a popular way to deliver content. People like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and YouTube could end up being bigger players. Who knows when this next big TV contract is signed, and the cable TV influence could be diminished. I think the broadcast over the year, Annalise, always will be powerful and play a big part in TV contracts like Fox and ABC, CBS, and the likes. But again, it's that next tier of broadcasters with cable maybe getting de-emphasized by cord cutters, and again, the streaming services becoming more involved in bidding for games, and it's going to be really fascinating to see. I still think, guys, because of the Big Ten's popularity, the huge alumni bases, the big markets it's in, I always think it's going to command a pretty hefty premium when it comes to selling its own TV rights, whatever the service is buying them.
Is attendance holding up as you look across the entire spectrum?
I think, I think, Lauren, that it's gotten shipped away, don't you? I just anecdotally, I remember in recent years, Mark Hollis at Michigan State bemoaning the fact they had a hard time filling their place up, and time was lapsing. I think this, a lot of it has to do with the students, I think. They don't seem to be as interested in going to games, especially if they can't be connected with their phones. Now, I'll be honest with you, too, fellas. Sometimes, everybody wants their cake and they want to eat it, too. Well, television wags everything, and they dictate all. They say, we're going to start these games at 8:30 on Saturday night in the Eastern time zone. That impacts a lot of people who drive a long way to ball games. And these games don't kick off at noon and 1 o'clock more like you and I remember on a consistent basis. So I think they want their games on that TV money. They're going to start their games, and TV wants you to start them, but that could impact the ability of some people and even the desire of some people to go to games that start so late.
Yeah, I see students looking around and say, let's see where the beer is. Let's see where the girls are.
Yeah.
Oh, they're at the bar. I think maybe I'll watch the game down the street.
Yeah.
I understand that.
I think they're trying to make, but they're gonna have to continue to change and evolve too, and try to create a different atmosphere at these ball games. maybe to attract the younger the students and the younger alums as well. Make it more of a social function where they're just there because the game's going on.
How many schools? Tom, are selling beer now at the games?
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you guys your opinion of that. You know, Ohio State's going to start. I know Minnesota and Purdue do it. I think Maryland does it as well. Those are the schools I think I know for sure sell it on a pretty much a stadium wide.
That's what I was going to ask you. Stadium wide, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Maryland does, Purdue does, Minnesota does, and like I said, Ohio State starting this year, which was a surprise to me. I always thought, we all know the schools who struggle to draw fans, they're the first to jump in to try to make their games more attractive. I was surprised Ohio State, Gene Smith, their AD, and the Board of Trustees are going in on it. But I think before long, you're going to probably see it widespread. I mean, I've got mixed emotions and feelings about it. I understand, but talk about, you know, sending some mixed messages when you hear about all the drug and alcohol education that goes on, and here these universities are turning around and selling alcohol right on the campus at ball games.
Yeah, I mean, the tailgating scene outdoors is, you know, I mean, if it's a night game, look out. I mean, yeah. Those guys are coming to the game just lit up. I mean, they've been drinking for 10 hours, and but then they get a couple hours where they're not drinking, but some guys could sneak in little bottles of things, and so it's just...
Always doing that to flash. Hey, now, how long before Illinois does it, you guys think?
Well, you know, Josh Whitman has basically said that's not under consideration right now. That's the way I get it.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, it's been brought up to him, and his reaction is, as far as I can tell, nothing now, but, you know, who knows? They may be discussing it at any point. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there, but it just seems to me. I know we had a baseball situation here, summer baseball, that Bob Aller had a team here. You remember? And if they could sell beer, they would have been able to sustain the team, but they couldn't sell beer, so that the team broke up. I mean, can you believe that? And I think the same thing is true, and not to a different extent, but in football. If you could sell beer, you would get more people to the games. I mean, it's just a fact of life.
It can't hurt to give it a crack. And I'm sure they'll police it. They'll cut sales off at the start of the fourth quarter and limit two per customer each visit. So, I think at some point, we all know there's always a search for revenue streams, and most of these schools will eventually probably turn to it. Do you guys realize the Big Ten Network does not take alcohol advertising?
No, I did not realize that.
And they're not going to, or did they start this year?
Well, Jim Delaney, from the start, never wanted to take any alcohol advertising at all. Imagine the money that network's leaving at the doorstep because of that.
Yeah,
that's a tremendous amount of money.
That gives you an idea. Well, that gives Delaney, let you know how Delaney feels about it. And he doesn't want any of it on the network, but then the schools turn around and opt to sell it on their campus. I've never asked him about it. He always kind of wondered how he feels about that. He probably understands what each school's needs and leaves that up to them to make their own decisions on campus.
Well, Tom, we're running short on time, but I know that P.J. Fleck is an interesting character, and P.J. Fleck reading some mean tweets the other day. I don't have a chance to see this or not. Here's P.J. Fleck reading some tweets about him. Some people don't like him.
P.J. Fleck is probably going to be a good coach for the Gophers. Thank you. Maybe even make it to a couple Big Ten title games. But man, is he annoying! Appreciate that. You're making an influence. P.J. Fleck hasn't even coached one game yet, and I already can't stand him. Typical. I can't stand P.J. Fleck. No one should be that energetic. P.J. Fleck looks like an 8-year-old dressed as a college head football coach. At least I look like one. P.J. Fleck looks like an utterly ridiculous, raging maniac in that tie under a windbreaker. That's a game day outfit. I appreciate all the tweets. Read them all the time. Thank you.
P.J. Fleck, courtesy of the Big Ten Network. Tom, that's entertaining stuff. You see a lot of, you know, actors and different entertainment people reading those mean tweets, but P.J. Fleck is perfect for something like that.
Yeah, one of them is Nick Offerman, who's an Illinois graduate, right? I always see him sometimes on Conan O'Brien doing that or something of that effect. It's kind of fun. But, yeah, you know, I actually got a chance to spend most of last Tuesday with Fleck at Big Ten Media Days. I was with him, went jogging with him in the morning, and I tell you what, 8 hours of PJ Fleck is like a week. as far as the energy goes and how many times he says elite, you know, go Gophers, ski you ma. I mean, it's genuine. I know how some people could be annoyed by it, but that enthusiasm is genuine. It's who he is. You know, he's an Illinois guy, suburban Chicago. So it's going to be fascinating to see what he can do.
Hey, I'm going to repeat a story, Tom. They beat Illinois here last year, and I went to the locker room, and he's standing outside the locker room where the players are, and he's I think he was on a cell phone talking to somebody probably. And anyway, it wasn't quite time for the press conference. I'm standing there just about 20 feet from him, and all of a sudden they open the locker room door. All the players were standing there screaming. He gets back about 10 yards, takes a dead run as hard as he can go, and like a sled on top of all the players, slid across the top of the players. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That's sort of become a tradition. Yeah, that became a tradition in Western Michigan, maybe Minnesota, too. Like a rock concert. He's right in the crowd, you know.
You're right.
I'll tell you what, his players love him. His players play hard for him. And I tell you what, the people that I know from Wisconsin that saw him and covered him in the Cotton Bowl where they played the Badgers said that Western Michigan team was well coached and that it played hard. And to me, those are the two best compliments any coach can get. So I can see where he could rub some people the wrong way. Some coaches are annoyed by him. They think he's an attention seeker. It's all about PJ Fleck, but you know what? If he wins, he'll get the last laugh, so it's going to be fun to see what he can do up there.
He's got a doable schedule. Those first seven or eight games, they could win. I mean, they won't be big underdogs in any of those games. They've got a real shot to get started. But I was trying to imagine Bear Bryant doing that, diving up on top of the players, or Amos Alonzo Stagg.
I know. It's so fun to see how our coaches have changed. And he's only 36 years old, guys.
Oh, wow, yeah. Young guy.
30, he's already been a head coach at a major university for 4 years. He's 36. And his wife was right by his side the whole time on Tuesday. He really referenced her a lot, and they seem to have a heck of a love affair. And he really loves his kid. He's time and again mentioning his family and what it means to him. So, you know what, it's all going in, but all this row the boat stuff, if you don't win, you got to think it's going to wear thin pretty quickly.
Oh, definitely. Well, Tom, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much, and training camp starts on Monday for Illinois, and season is almost here, so it's an exciting time.
I appreciate you having me. Take care, fellas.
Look forward to seeing you when you get here, Tom.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Tom Dienhardt, the Big Ten Network. Give him a follow on Twitter at BTN Tom Dienhardt. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back here. Maybe get into the Nick Saban college football season format he'd like to see. We'll tell you about that. Coming up at 9:45, Brad Dancer. 10 o'clock, Will Leach. And then I forgot to mention earlier, the mayor of Liddyville, also known as Illini running backs coach Thad Ward, will join us at 10:30. All that's coming up here on DWS.
Looking forward to 2017, just like every coach in the country. You know, we're trying to build off the momentum we had a season ago when we had a great win at the Pinstripe Bowl. The way we finished the season, especially our last nine games, I think really gained some positive momentum into the bowl game. And now to go into 2017 to try to win, a bowl game, back-to-back years for the first time in program history. We've got a lot of excitement when it comes to that, and that's the way our guys have prepared.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to Tom Dienhardt for joining us for about 20-some minutes or so. Always good to catch up with him.
We got a moment here. I meant to tell you that Rex Smith, who was the guy that caught the pass against Michigan in the snowstorm in 1951 when Illinois won 7-0, just a driving snowstorm. I call it the most famous pass reception in Illinois history, passed away this week.
Oh, okay.
And so did Sammy Rebecca, who kicked the field goal to beat Northwestern that year 3-0.
So two guys from that squad passed away this week.
Both good buddies of mine, too. I mean, Rex was in journalism school, taking journalism classes with me. I assume he was in journalism school. I can't remember that far back, but I know he was in class with me.
How many inches of snow did we get that day?
Oh, I don't know. It was unbelievable.
In
those days, we're a bunch of dummies. We sat there and watched the game. You know, I mean, it was, you know, we're huddled up and And it's nothing to nothing, nothing to nothing, and the game is going to end nothing to nothing.
Yeah.
And Tommy O'Connell, right at the very end, hit a couple passes in that snowstorm, and then the pass to Rex Smith, well, he was wide open. I mean, it was a fake in the line, and it was only about a 15 or 20-yard pass, and he caught it and stepped in the end zone. The game was over, and Illinois won 7-0 right. against Michigan and went to the Rose Bowl and won the Rose Bowl.
That's it's really hard to have to throw
Rex
the ball
Rex was a
lot.
Great player, by the way. He was really good. Receiver.
It's really hard to execute in weather like that.
Oh, yeah.
When you can't see and when the field is just a sloppy mess, it's really hard to execute. So that's when you have to execute, they did. That's
I don't know we've ever played in a more difficult conditions than that day. It was incredible.
I would imagine it was just to top it.
It was just the snow was coming down and was coming down sideways. You know, it was really it was blowing and snowing.
We don't see those kind of snowstorms too much anymore.
Well,
especially the last couple of years with
not with global warming.
Don't even go. We don't have time for that today. Maybe next week. We're running short on time.
Go ahead.
But we don't have a lot of time to get into this today. But I definitely wanted to mention this. Nick Saban this week made some comments on how he feels that college football should change their scheduling. He just has some thoughts. He thinks they should do the bowl games just like the NCAA tournament, and not by record, but some kind of power rating that mm-hmm. gets you into a bowl game. And he says by playing all five Power Five conference schools, don't play any of those schools that are not in the Power Five conferences in any of your 12 games. Play all Power Five schools, and then rate what your power rating is, and then put people in the bowl games. Now, he said people might be a little less interested in maybe bowl games and more interested in expanding the playoffs. So I think there you go right there. He wants to expand the playoff a little bit,
yeah.
even though he's been in it 3 years in a row. But he's but I think this isn't a terrible idea.
You want to go to eight?
I do want to go to eight. I think then it could stop there. I know that
sure it would stop there, except the next step would be 16.
Yeah, and that's what formerly Division
it's
gone One Double A
to four, and yeah. you know
FCS level plays 16 teams. They've had 16 in the past, and I would be fine with eight. I think 16 is too many for college football, and I think you still keep the bowl games. But I think it's a great idea. I think the six wins requirement. If you can't finish above 500, you shouldn't be going to the postseason. But there's so many bowl games. It's like 40. It's 38 to 40 games. And like everybody's making a bowl game. And because there are so many bowl games, you got 5 and 7 teams making bowl games. And if you can't even finish 500, you're done. Like you just need to go, just be done. Like I don't understand why you need to be in a bowl game at 5 and 7. Well, Nebraska did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, they got to fill.
They got to fill. I get
fill
that.
The bowls, and it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah,
is
but
does it hurt you to see somebody go to, you know, if Illinois goes 5 and 7, goes to the bowls, that hurt you?
It doesn't hurt me, but it doesn't.
Well, I mean, why would you object to it?
Because you finish.
They want to go.
They want to go. Of course they
do. Then let them go.
You finish under 500. Why should
What's
you get postseason?
Difference?
Because
what if you finish 0-10? You go to a bowl game. It's fun. Well,
no, it's college football. It's about you need to win games. And you shouldn't be rewarded for losing games. A bowl game is a reward, and you get all kinds of goodies and bags and electronics. And
there's nothing wrong with the way they're doing it right now.
I think there are too many bowl games.
Well everybody says that.
Yeah, but they're going to keep growing.
But I still don't. If Illinois can get to a bowl game, that's an accomplishment.
It is an accomplishment.
I mean,
how
big an accomplishment would it be for Illinois to go 6-6 this year? I mean,
oh, it'd be tremendous.
It'd be unbelievable. If they went 6-6, we'd be jumping up and down.
Yeah, because they went 3-9 last year, and they lost some really key players off the team from last season's team, and there's a lot of experience. There's a lot of inexperience. There's a lot of depth issues on this year's team. They're not expected to win very many more games than last year. I'm maybe 4 or 5 games, but if they win 6, I think that is an incredible
accomplishment. Over-under is 3.5.
Oh, you're doing the over-under on me here.
Or 2.5.
Let's leave it at 3.5, and I'm going to go over. I'm gonna be.
You think they're going to win 4? Huh?
I think they're going to win 4 games this year, potentially more. But I'm going to go with 4. We'll have to make a wager off there on this and see what happens. But anyway, so that's an interesting thought by Nick Saban this week, and see how things go. But and he also one other thing, and this gets talked about every year. He said it's very hard for players to go 27 days without playing a game and then go into the playoffs. And it's like that, you know, for the other games that are.
It changes the team.
Yeah, it does, because you're off for an entire month without playing against
anybody.
Get some
players back.
Yep, it helps get guys healthy. So we'll take a time out. We're going to bring in Brad Dancer, talk to him, catch up on one of his players is playing for a championship in a tournament this afternoon here in Champaign. Get his thoughts on that coming up here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us on yet another Saturday. Now joining us, Brad Dancer, the head coach of the Illini men's tennis team. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. If I sound out of breath, I'm in the middle of capture the flag with my boys before I head into Akron today. So
you're not running a marathon. The last time we had you on the show, you were running a marathon.
How are you guys doing?
Good, not too bad. Well, you got one of your players playing in a championship match today. Alex Vukic is playing for his second career professional title today, and after getting a win yesterday, and just a good opportunity for him at the JSM Futures of Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, particularly, you know, obviously it's unbelievable to have this event in our backyard, and thanks to JSM and the Hartman family for everything they do. But, you know, I think for Alex, he's been in a final before, but not at this level. It's a little bit smaller level future tournament, so it's a big deal for him today, and I think he's pretty excited about the opportunity, and particularly playing on his home courts to maybe take his first title. So,
well, Brad, explain the amateur versus pro element in this.
Yeah, so again, there's a number of people in the field. Maybe I'm trying to think overall, maybe four or five or six people that play as amateurs. You know, they can play through the draw, play everything. And then what they just have to do is, you know, our guys do a great record keeping of tracking all their expenses that they have throughout the year. And they just can't earn more than their expenses in a given year. And that's a rule change that the NCAA made a few years back, and it's really been outstanding for these guys because, needless to say, their whole lives they've put a lot of investment into their tennis. And so it's not a huge purse, but it certainly can help offset some expenses, which is great.
I was going to say, Vukic undoubtedly has some expenses coming from Australia, and he goes back home once in a while, doesn't he?
Exactly. Goes back home, plays tournaments there, and you know, and he's set before school to head off for a European swing to play a few events over in Europe as well. So needless to say, those are not inexpensive undertakings. So he's got a lot of expenses, so anything helps to sort of offset that.
But he can receive awards up to the level of what his expenses are. Is that what
exactly.
You're telling me?
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Okay, I want to talk to you about Vukic a little bit because I was there, you know, at Atkins when he beat Mikael Torgard from Ohio State. Oh, he was number one at the time. He's a Scandinavian, I believe. He was number one at the time, and Vukic beat him. And I thought Vukic had a real chance to win the national championship this year. Tell me what happened. It was kind of a secret there for a while, I think you were keeping as far as his injury. And tell us what happened.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think down the stretch, when we finished up the regular season, he's had a little bit of an issue with his wrist, and it flared up pretty strong heading into the NCAA tournament, the team tournament. And it was so bad, you know, we sat him in the first round against Drake. We did not think he was going to play against Oklahoma State. His performance against Oklahoma State was really subpar for him.
Yeah,
I think he won that kind of surely on guts and so forth. And then after we lost TCU again, we could just tell that he was not himself. And I think just in his best interest, you know, for what he wanted to accomplish this summer, you know, we held him out of the tournament. And then he was planning on trying to play a few weeks after that. But the bottom line is just he hasn't been ready until now. Until these tournaments, so it's taken, you know, a while here to get that thing healed up. So I think looking back, it was the right decision for him not to play the tournament.
Now, when he played Cameron Norrie at TCU, Norrie was ranked number one, and my question to you is, how close was Vukic to being able to win the national championship had he been healthy?
Oh, I mean, he's clearly, you know, I think there's this year there's some real special players in the tournament, and you know, Ty Kwiatkowski won it. He's a great player. Blumberg is in the semifinals of Challenger today. He was the finalist. Eubanks is in the quarterfinals of the Atlanta professional event. So there's about six or seven guys in college tennis this year that are having fairly significant success at the professional level. So this may be, you know, back when Kevin and Isner and Sam Devdevarman and Jesse Levine, those guys all hit top 100 sort of a year or two out of college. And this crew right here maybe the next crew to sort of make a big jump right out of college and maybe not have them take 4 or 5 years. But I could see, again, maybe 4 or 5 of these guys being in the top 100 a year or so from now.
Where do you think Vukic ranks nationally among amateurs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, again, kind of that slew that you went through, Norrie and Torpegaard, and Norrie has since turned pro, so he left TCU and turned pro. But there's a great crop, and I think anybody would tell you that he's in that group. He's certainly in that top five and deserves that. And so, you know, it's tough to say because I think the amateur line that you have sort of in golf where they play a little bit longer as amateurs is a little bit blurred because there's also a number of great international players probably aged 16, 17, 18 that are great, great players that are not amateurs that are playing as professionals already. So it's a little bit different than it is, say, in golf.
Any of these guys Americans?
Not too many of them, no. It's really sad right now. I mean, the Eubanks kid is, and the Blumberg kid, and Kwiatkowski is. So there's a few of them that are the top of college tennis. But you know, tennis is just it's an international sport, and it's a bigger deal than in most countries than it is in the States right now. And it's a little bit sad for me.
And your freshman beat Drake in the tournament 4-0 without Vukic. What are you going to have around Vukic this season for the Illini?
It's a great question. I mean, we are clearly going to have a good team. There's no question about that. You know, I think the freshman class just last year where Clark was playing on, you know, half a hand and everything else, and he's had a phenomenal summer. He's had a better summer than Vukic so far, Clark has. And so he's been fantastic. I think Aaron Hiltzik's starting to play a little bit better. And then we've got, you know, a freshman class coming in, and some of these guys are having some great success so far this year, this summer. So it's going to be incredibly competitive to see just who's filling our lineup spots. We're going to have some guys down at the 8-9 hole that I think could actually play two or three and win for us in the Big Ten. So it's going to be we're going to have one of the best teams we've had in a long time, unless I mess it up.
I don't think you will. Illini men's tennis coach Brad Dancer joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Well, the events that have been going on the last couple of weeks here probably wouldn't be possible without the Atkins Tennis Center, and you know the facilities is the constant talk with other programs, but it's not something that you're too overly worried about with your facility.
I mean, we're spoiled. You know, I think we got one of the best facilities in the country. You know, if it rains, we just walk a couple steps and head indoors, and you know, we've got. You know, I always tell Josh every time I talk to him, we got everything we need. And you know, there's all sorts of things that you want. And yes, we can have bells and whistles and make it a lot better. But I think from a sports perspective, you got to kind of realize where you are and you got to have the things you need. And if you got great courts and you got great, you know, just great opportunities for the players to play, then the rest of it is just making a special environment for those guys and make a great culture.
Now, so Alex, he plays at noon today. What give us the kind of the breakdown of that match, and what I mean, Illini fans want to go out and watch. What can they expect? It's going to be a great weather day, so I can't see why they wouldn't want to go out and watch.
Yeah, it's going to be a perfect day for tennis out there, and so I think it's going to be. He plays Deaton Bauman, who's a player from Southern California, big, strong player, huge hitter of the ball, hits the ball as big probably as anybody in the world. So you're going to see
really?
Somebody hits the ball as hard as. You know, I'm trying to think of some of the big, big hitters like a Thomas Berdych or Marin Cilic. You know, he hits the ball like them. He just crushes the ball. So, and Vukic is not a soft hitter of the ball either. So it's going to be, you know, this is clearly a top 100 pace type match that these guys will be hitting the ball. It's a little bit interesting there is Deaton had a hiatus from the tour because he was injured. So he's been out. So he actually had to go through qualifying this week. And he breezed through qualifying and has kind of breezed right on through this whole tournament. All the way to the finals, but you got to think at some point all those matches. I guess he's probably played. You know, he's in the doubles final with Ferris yesterday too. So Deaton's played a ton of matches. So you know that might be the one little edge that Vukic can have is he can go out there and make it a super physical match early on and try to just kind of establish that physicality. Might not be the easiest thing for Bauman to tolerate over time.
It's a title match this afternoon at noon. The JSM Futures of Champaign-Urbana. A really four-letter word that people love, free. So the mission is free today, and it's at noon. Coach, thanks so much for your time. We're short on time. We appreciate you joining us and giving us the breakdown today.
You got it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
yep.
Brad.
Yep. It's Brad Dancer, Illini men's tennis coach, joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Want to get a quick text message in before we take a time out and bring in Will Leach on the 815 area code on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Nick Saban's idea is laughable. Alabama plays an FCS school every season and a non-Power 5 FBS as well. If he was serious, he would do the schedule and lead rather than say an idea that other schools won't agree to. He would rather grumble about things than complain about how the deck is stacked against the poor old Crimson Tide. And
they also play games late in the season. They intersperse mm-hmm. games against lesser teams in the middle of the SEC conference race, which is an advantage to them because basically it's a week off. I mean, you know, that's an exaggeration, but it's a week where you can, you know, play the reserves a little bit and coast and then get ready for the next week.
What he did say in reference to that, I'm glad the texter texted that in, is he actually referenced that. He said, and he doesn't really want to play those weak teams. You know, he goes, you win a game 45-7 and you still really don't know for sure if your team is really good or not good. He said he'd rather play teams like Florida State, which they are doing this year. And you're laughing kind of.
No, no, I just, yeah. he doesn't play eight in a row is what I'm saying.
No, yeah, he doesn't.
You know, or nine, and by the way, they don't play nine.
No. He wants to play 10 conference games.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah. Okay, but they play eight, and they intersperse.
Yep, they do. So he's for playing the Florida States, who he's opening the season with, instead of those weak teams that they play every year. I'm with him. You didn't learn nothing. You know, Illinois, how many years has Illinois started over there just across the street, you know, winning 50-0, and then 2 weeks later just get blasted by a Big Ten team? I mean, it's just you learn absolutely nothing about how good your team is. It's kind of a preseason game to start the season like that, and then you really find out a few weeks later. No, I don't think any team's ever going to play a really hard Power 5 team all 12 games. We'll take a timeout. Will Leach coming up next. Want to get his thoughts on the spat between Yadier Molina and Mike Matheny and the Cardinals. Trading deadline Monday. Should they make any moves to help him, or should they just trade Lance Lynn and others? We'll talk to Will about that coming up here on DWS.
Jerko ready for it, into center. Base hit, Jed Jerko. Bam, generates that run. Hustling down the line, stealing second base, and scoring the first run, it's 1-0. Round ball, hit to second, Wong to the plate. Out at the plate. In one of the biggest plays of the night, Wong a strike to Molina. The 2-2. Struck him out! Rosenthal comes in and shuts the door here in the eighth. Second and third, nobody out. Diamondbacks held off the scoreboard.
Try not, you know, to make too much of it like any other time. Just come in and see what the situation was, knowing that, you know, I got to make some pitches. And really, you know, anything can happen. And you can give up a home run on a good pitch. And so, you know, just from experience, just know that I got to stay focused and do my best. And if it works out, great. And if not, it's just kind of how it's part of the game, you know. Like always with this team, talk about just the professionalism and guys just showing up every day and, you know, focusing on what they can do. And, you know, we keep doing that. I think, you know, we're in a spot where we definitely have a chance statistically to make a run in the division. And I think if we keep that focus, keep showing up, we obviously have a lot of talent, and we should be able to hang with just about anybody.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. Those highlights courtesy of Fox Sports Midwest, and that was Trevor Rosenthal on Getting Out of the Jam. Pleased to be joined by Will Leach from Mattoon, senior writer for Sports on Earth, Deadspin founder. Will, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I'm always happy to come on.
Yeah, you're a big Cardinals fan, and I'm sure in the eighth inning last night, did you turn away or did you stick with it?
If I was going to turn away, I feel like I would have done that months ago. I've made it this far. I feel like I've got to kind of hang around, you know, particularly with how kind of vital this series is, not just the fact that it's a team that you're theoretically chasing in the wild card, but, you know, every game brings you a little bit more data of whether this team's going to be a buyer or whether they're going to be a seller. And you wonder, even if it, not only with last night's game, but the next couple of games coming up, whether they make a decision based on whether they win or lose this game. I know it seems silly, it's one game in a long season, but this is exactly the type of year where these games are particularly huge.
Well, they've had a good week so far against teams they're chasing in the wild card. They swept the Rockies and now have split the first two against the Diamondbacks, so they've won 4 out of 5, and that's a good stretch when you have to win games against good teams. And wasn't sure if they were going to do that or not, but we'll see what happens today and tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think it really is that kind of, it could get to the point where, you know, Lance Lynn is scheduled to pitch tomorrow, and no one is more rumored to be traded right now than Lance Lynn. So the idea that even if they lose tonight, maybe that makes them feel more comfortable pulling a trigger on that trade tomorrow. If they win, Lynn's pitching so well right now, maybe you think if they can win 3 or 4 from Arizona, makes a 6-1 homestand, you kind of have to run for it a little bit. So it's really, it's always stressful anyway when you're watching any sort of sporting event. But this, you know, these games this week, if the Cardinals were going to make a run, this was the exact time to do it. in every single one of these teams.
Well, Will, if you were going to help the Cardinals with a trade, what position would you what position would you emphasize?
Yeah, I think that's the issue. It's not so much – that's why I'm wary of any sort of major deadline deals to be a buyer. Is what the Cardinals really have is they have almost roster cluttering. They have too many guys that can play second, too many guys that can play third, and too many guys that can play first, and way too many guys that can play the outfield. So, you know, way too many guys. So for me, that's the type of thing – it's the same reason that when you look at the trade deadline – people want pitching because people can always use pitching. But you look at a guy like Zach Cozart from Cincinnati. He's a shortstop that's having a terrific year. Cincinnati would love to trade him. The problem is during the season, people generally know who their shortstop is. They generally know what they're going to do, whereas they'll always take pitching. That's the issue with the Cardinals right now. You can justify really playing any of these guys. But the problem is you almost need an off-season uncluttering of the roster where you trade two or three of these outfielders and maybe a pitcher for a more of a high power batter, a superstar type player. As for trade deadline, I don't think there's any impact bat. Frankly, I think that most of the impact bat, it's hard to find an impact bat that's out there right now. It's better than anything the Cardinals have with the roster, even on when things are working well. So I think that what they need, there's no like logical position. Obviously, they can upgrade, but I do think that. You can, if the Cardinals are going to be looking to trade for anything, and I really don't think they're going to, I think you can maybe make an argument for a bullpen arm. But more likely, I think the Cardinals are in a sell situation or a hold situation rather than a buy situation.
Well, and the name that's been mentioned, again, mentions every year, but it, you know, I saw another story on it yesterday, and maybe it wouldn't happen until the offseason, is Stanton from Miami. It's a lot of money left in that deal, and a lot of players probably would have to go, but Miami may want to dump that contract at some point. That's the kind of bat exactly that the Cardinals need, but that's probably more of a fantasy than reality. I've said that before on the show, but I wanted to get your thoughts. Is that something that you see as a realistic thing at some point in the future?
It sounds perfect. He would fit perfect in that lineup. Just need, in that three spot, he'd be absolutely ideal for now, for the next 2 or 3 years, I think, but that contract, you know, when Miami signed that contract, you know, the whole idea, the reason that he has that contract is Miami, they needed to overwhelm him. They needed to give him something that no one else in baseball would even consider giving him because that's the only way he was going to stay in Miami. Mm-hmm. It was almost a poison pill contract. And the worst part of that contract is if it turns out perfect, if you trade for him, and listen, that contract is so terrible. The good side of getting Stanton is that contract is so terrible, you probably don't have to give up a lot of talent. At least you shouldn't have to. If you do, I think you've really lost that trade because that contract is so onerous. But the other problem with that trade too, that contract too, is if he's fantastic the way that you want him to be the next 2 years, he can opt out of it. He can opt out and go get another contract. And if he's not what you want to do the next couple of years, then you're really in trouble because then you're stuck with a really bad contract with a guy that's getting older. We've clearly seen, you know, big guys, big power hitters, even the best ones, like say an Albert Pujols.
Yes.
What happens when they get into their mid 30s? You know, so it sounds wonderful, and just the idea of Stanton that the Cardinals need a Stanton type player, and they might even need Giancarlo Stanton, but with that contract, the way that it's set up. I honestly just do not think it's realistic.
I offered Paul Klee out in Denver the entire infield for Arenado, but he turned me down.
I think he probably made the right call on that.
Because the reason I said that is because the infield was in Memphis the other day, and now they're in St. Louis. Memphis beat Colorado 3-2 the other day. Did you see that game?
I mean, it's really something. It's so funny to think. I've joked a couple of times that all these Cardinal players that keep coming up from Memphis, are they sure they want to make the trip? That's a team that's 30 games over 500.
Yes.
Coming up to a team that has been hovering around 500 all year and apparently is fighting with its manager now. So,
well, talk about that, Will. You really think there's a dispute between he and Molina?
Hey, let me, that's before we get into that, Will, let's play Molina and Matheny yesterday before the game. What's going on between those two?
I had to defend myself. I mean, people, when you see a man call you that way, that you look tired in the middle of the game, running the bases, I mean, that's the people are going to think that you are when you're not. I mean, I had to defend myself. Let me clear something. I got no problem with Carson here. I mean, I'm gonna help him out the way I can, the best way I can. The problem is that my comment is what I saw in the paper today. Don't start anything with Carson.
Actually, I never said he was tired. Conversation happened exactly how it happened out here. It happened inside with him, and it was very, very clear. And I think it just got misspoken in translation, the fact that, yeah, I watched him on the bases, and it looked like something was bothering him, like what took him out of the game. He took himself out, you know, against the Cubs, and knowing that ankle, and also got a knee that's been barking. Tired never came out of my mouth. Somehow I think it was interpreted, and someone said it was insinuated, and I think it needs to be kept to what was said.
Yadier Molina, Mike Matheny, sound courtesy of Fox Sports Midwest. Here's Matheny's original quote, and Will, I know you've seen this. Yadier's caught a lot. Yesterday, it's just kind of watching him go around the bases. You can tell he's, you know, and then he stops and changed course mid-sentence. And so the people there thought he was implying he was tired. And
could have been hurting.
Yeah, and
as opposed to tired.
Yeah, so he actually never said the word tired, but the reporters kind of said the word tired, and Molina obviously was upset, as he should be.
Yeah, you know, it's a strange situation. There's a lot going on in this situation. On one hand, listen, as someone that has, I think it's fair to say, been rather critical of Matheny's strategic acumen, I'll say that he's not wrong about Yadi here. He was looking wobbly on the base path the other day, and maybe it was tired, maybe it was his knee. Either way, it was smart to sit him. You know, this, one of the issues with Yadi, like, I understand that Yadi wants to play every day. He's a competitor. It's a fan, like, exactly the guy you want to have play. You want a player to want to play as hard as he does. But he's been wearing down at the end of season. And if the Cardinals just signed him to a 3 more years, I mean, you need him to be upright, and you're going to need him to rest, particularly now that they brought up Carson Kelly, who is a much better hitter and a much better backup catcher than Eric Fryer was before. So you're actually not losing as much when you play someone like that. The real issue for that, so I understand, I understand what Matheny was saying. I think he's probably right. I also understand why Molina would be frustrated by that, because he's a competitor. He doesn't want to be called tired. To me, the larger issue is, you know, the whole Mike Matheny thing is supposed to be players love him, right? Like, we're all supposed to kind of forgive the double switches and the buntings and the bullpen kind of miscues and just some of the antsiness with young players. You're supposed to forgive all of that, because he gets along with the players so well. He's such a good guy in the clubhouse. That was the reason he was hired. He had played so recently. He was young. He'd get along with young players. To me, the most disturbing part of the aspect of this is the team leader. Like, Yadier Molina, potential future Hall of Famer, the leader of this Cardinals team, one of the leaders in baseball. You saw him at the All-Star game. He was the one that caught the pitches from Roberto Clemente's family. He was the one wearing the crazy gold catching equipment. He's clearly beloved around baseball. He felt comfortable in that, and through social media, once again, social media causes nothing but headaches.
Yes.
But through social media, to call out his manager, and not only to call his manager, again, kind of playing the social media game a little bit, but look at the players that all liked his post. Colton Wong, a guy that's had issues with Matheny in the past. Tommy Pham, a guy that's had issues with Matheny in the past. Like, you've got a lot. There's clearly been a little bit of a fissure with this team among some of guys that are considered Matheny's guys and some guys that aren't considered Matheny's guys. And to me, a lot of that's all been kind of background. Some of that's been speculation. Some of that has been, you know, how much of this is real. It just seems like it. Passive-aggressive comments here or there. But for Yadier Molina, again, this is not – like, I love Colton Wong, but Colton Wong does not have stature to say something like this without, I think, being called out for a little bit. But for Yadier Molina to call out Matheny like this in a public forum, I think it speaks to something going on that's a little bit more worrisome than just maybe a misinterpreted quote.
Will Leach joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's the senior writer for Sports on Earth. Well, let's get off the Cardinals and just the Cubs. And they lost last night 2-1 to the Brewers. The Brewers were in a tailspin, but now the Cubs are in first place. They lost 2-1 last night, but they're still in first place, and I feel like this is just going to go the way we all expected it to go. They're going to start to pull away here at some point.
You know, I think so. I still feel like the Cubs have not solved all of their problems yet. I think Quintana obviously made a big difference for them, fixing kind of the back of the rotation. But, you know, they still got issues. Lackey has certainly not been right all year. The back half of that rotation has some problems. We certainly saw in the first game of that Cardinals series Powell occasionally. Their bullpen can have some issues. Edwards has been good, but you know, you don't know some about some of those other guys, Strope, and some other guys that have a tendency to get wild. And, you know, the offense seems to be coming around. Schwarber is clearly coming around, as I think everyone expected him to. But remember, the thing that made the Cubs great last year was not all these home runs and was not all this, not even the bullpen. Remember, the bullpen was like a major issue until they traded for Chapman. This is something the Cubs are worried about. The thing that made the Cubs so great last year was their defense. Like, they had kind of historic defense. In a way, Schwarber getting hurt early in the season last year reshaped their season accidentally in a terrific way. It just changed their entire structure out there, where they started playing out more and more in center field, having Fowler be out there and having Hayward come out. It really, their outfield was better, their defense was better, and they were just an incredible run prevention team last year. They're not that team this year. They're just not that team this year. It doesn't mean that they're not still the best team in the Central. I think you can make a pretty strong argument that they are moving forward. But the idea that they're just going to turn into last year's Cubs and run away with the Central, I just don't, like, there hasn't been a level of urgency with the team all year. The defense isn't good. The rotation has problems in the back end. The bullpen has issues. And the lineup is not this overpowering juggernaut that I think they were kind of hoping it was going to be.
They strike out a lot.
Yeah, they do. Well, of course, everybody in baseball.
Yeah.
A lot anymore. But I do, like, there are issues with that team that may not cost them the NL Central this year. But I think it's clear. Remember last year, I remember beginning of this year, there were some of the statistical analyst predictions, like Pecota, Baseball Perspective. Some of them said the Dodgers might be like one or two games better than the Cubs. And people were appalled. They're like, what a horrible projection system. The Cubs are going to have the best team in baseball by far. They're going to be even better than they were last year. And look what's happened. The Dodgers have been better than the Cubs were last year, kind of historically great. And the Cubs have fallen back. Now, I think the Cubs are the best team in the division. But the idea that they're just going to just turn a switch and just become last year's team, they've been hot after the break. They, frankly, won a couple of games against St. Louis and Wrigley that they probably should have lost. And then they play the White Sox, a terrible team, and they've lost the Brewers in the first game. So the idea that the Cubs have now they've turned it back on, I'm not so sure. Again, I still think they'll win the division, but they're not last year's Cubs.
I'm going to switch you, Will, over to North Carolina and tell me what's going to happen August the 16th when the Committee on Infractions sits down with Carolina and decides what to do about 18 years of academic fraud.
Well, the first thing, as we all know, is they will call up Bruce Weber, Darren Williams, Steve Brown, and the rest of Illini Nation and hand them that championship trophy that we so justifiably deserve from that year. No, you know, it's funny. This has gone on for so long. There's a little part of me that's still a little part that feels like we're going to get to that date, and they're going to be like, actually, we have some more study to do. It's just gone on for so long at this point, considering how it certainly speaks to North Carolina's power in the sport and the NCAA's sometimes catering to the powers that, you know, you think how swiftly they've acted and how kind of irrationally they've acted for a lot of universities in the past, Illinois included among them, that North Carolina feels like it's gotten every benefit of every doubt in this. In a scandal that, let's not forget, like if you are under the idea that this is intercollegiate athletics and these are students and they need to be learning, and you know, there's arguments against that these days that people make, but if you are under the belief that this is what college sports are, it's hard to think of a worse crime that a school could really do. But it's gone on for so long, and North Carolina has such power. It still feels like it's going to be worst case scenario. I don't think they'll take down any banners, but I do think worst case scenario, maybe they lose one or they lose a couple scholarships. You know, you think of what would happen if this would have happened to another school. Imagine if this happened to, if UNLV in like the 80s were doing this, they still would not be playing basketball at UNLV. Mm-hmm. But the way North Carolina is, I just don't believe, even with all the preponderance of evidence, with all the kind of terrible stuff that they did, I just don't believe they're going to get the books thrown at them the way that I feel like a lot of people put.
Well, they say that they won't take the 2005 banner down because that the statute of limitations takes care of that one, and they won't take the 2016 banner down because it came after the investigation started in 2014. So
then I'm sure there's going to be a very strongly worded letter. So, you know, look out, North Carolina. I think that's right. You know, I think there was a clear strategy by North Carolina here to kind of wait out the clock. Just kind of like, see if you can sneak out another championship. You know, Williams is getting older. You see what they're going to do. And, you know, when this scandal first hit, it felt like a shaking of the very foundation of college sports. North Carolina, Dean Smith, Chapel Hill, Tobacco Road, all this wonderful stuff is so central to kind of the mythos of college sports, that they would be involved in something as fundamentally deceptive as grade changing and fake classes and everything. And we thought, wow, they're just going to get hammered. And it's just gone on so long now. I feel like there's no way you can really give them the punishment they deserve. So I think they're going to give them something, unfortunately, pretty light.
I steal from a friend who said they think they're on the southern side of heaven.
Well, certainly Sean May was that night. For sure.
Well, they got a title in 2009 as well. That's a part of this the years too, isn't it?
That would fall in.
Yeah, that would fall in. But again, you know, and we'll see. Like, I still feel like, USC was the champion that year in football, and Texas was the year. Like, the idea of taking down banners for me, it's a weird kind of Orwellian wiping of history. Like,
me too.
Out a banner, the champion that year with North Carolina, no matter what kind of happens with that. So I feel like that's a punishment that upsets alumni, but it's not really a punishment.
The Fab Five still happened, okay, with Michigan.
And they were really fun.
Yeah, they were. Will Leach joining us here for just a few more minutes on Saturday Sports Knock on DWS. We'll see what happens with that. We're anxious to find out. Let's get your thoughts on Brad Underwood. He offered another guard in Indianapolis yesterday. I'll say it again: Indianapolis, Illinois never gets players from there, and when they do, they don't get to keep them. Hence, Jalen Coleman lands. You know, it's just the off season. He's offered a lot of kids. What do you think of his efforts so far in this 3 or 4 months he's been here?
You know, there's an undeniable aggression in their tactics. And it feels different. And again, you know, I was a gross defender. I feel like it was probably time to make a move at the end. But I was generally a gross defender. One of the things I liked about Gross was he was willing to shoot high. It didn't really work out for him. But, you know, this was something that got us very excited when Gross first got hired. He was going after the top guys. He was willing to shoot for the stars and try to get those top guys. It didn't work. But even with that kind of aggression, Underwood feels a little like more aggressive. Like, clearly, with Antigua as a recruiting kind of guru in this regard, for what that's worth, there's a clear aggression to go after these top guys, and where they're taken very seriously. You know, I remember when Gross would go after some of these guys, it would be like, you know, it's clear like they're going to go to Duke or Kentucky, and they're just kind of listing Illinois, so because out of like politeness to the high school coach or politeness to Gross. And this feels like the Illini are in on a lot of these guys. And, you know, I still have some questions about, we'll see how some of these freshmen, that balance of getting just like a basic competitive team on the floor next year, particularly in the front court, has led them to, I think, offer some guys that maybe in a couple of years they might not offer. But that said, that's the part of this transition. You know, remember, this was the thing with Underwood. You know, the whole idea was, listen, obviously we know he can coach, but is he going to be able to recruit at that top level? For me, obviously there's been a couple guys that they went for and not gotten, but the idea that there is a clear aggression and a clear, more to the point, an obvious direction that they're going is a relief. You know, again, Gross went hard for recruiting, but you weren't sure how it was all going to fit together. And more to the point, he never got that point guard that he really desperately needed. We'll see if that's the issue with Underwood, but I have to say, to see Illinois putting itself out there and acting as if it is the place that its longtime fans have felt like it is, has been all along and should be again, I have to say that's exciting to see.
I got one last question for Will Leach. I can't wait to hear the answer. Beer at college football games.
Well, I'll put it this way. There is an argument. I live in Athens, Georgia, as you know. And there are some SEC schools that are talking about this, and some of them have even put it through. What we found here, and again, people tailgate in Champaign, but people tailgate in the South. Mm-hmm. They really go pretty crazy. And there is a school of thought that down here that selling beers at the game actually will relax everybody a little bit. because people, like, in all seriousness, people, like, they will tailgate all day and go as hard as they can to almost make up for those 3 hours.
It's not funny.
That is honestly a school of thought here. That's honestly what some people, I've heard, like school officials, like, posit this theory. So it feels, I'll put it this way, like, if you'd have told me 10 years ago that there'd be slot machines in bars, I would have thought that was crazy. If you'd have told me 10 years ago there'd be states that had marijuana legal, I'd have thought that was crazy. But it turned out, hey, when the state can make a bunch of money from this, or a school can make a bunch of money from this, it's amazing how all of a sudden it starts to become a little bit more acceptable. I feel like that's it's not just about revenue like everybody else is, everything else is. And I think that I don't think that college football, even if you sell beer at a game, is any danger of turning into the atmosphere of an NFL game. I think it's too tradition-oriented. There's just a different kind of fan that goes to a college football game that goes to an NFL game. So even if there is beer, I don't think this is going to turn into some sort of madhouse, Mad Max, crazy people jumping out of the stands, English soccer game or anything. So I don't see a major problem with it, but certainly, you know, there's a certain kind of hypocrisy to it. The idea that this
college
sport, when none of these guys can do that, there's a moral hypocrisy to it. But, you know, if we're going to start playing the moral hypocrisy game, we're going to have to reverse the clock a lot, because we've crossed that bridge quite a bit in the last 20 years.
Will, we appreciate it. As always, great stuff. We can probably cover a lot of topics. I know you pay attention to politics as well. And
we could do another half hour on that real quick.
We could skip our next guest.
I'd be crying at the end of it, though. Well,
tell us about Scaramucci.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't want to get you guys fined.
No, don't do that, please. So, Will, the offer always stands that when you're back in town, let us know, and we'll definitely want to have you in studio.
I'm going to be back for the Nebraska game this year.
So oh, are you?
Fantastic.
I'd love to do it. Yep,
well, let's figure on it.
That's a Friday night game, so we'll maybe have you on the next morning.
Yep. We'll see if they're selling alcohol at the game by then.
Okay. All right. Will, thanks so much. Have a good weekend. Yep. That is Will Leach of Mattoon Native, went to the University of Illinois, founder of Deadspin, right now the senior writer for Sports on Earth, contributing editor for New York. So always good to have him on the program. I want to mention that the kid's name, Aaron Henry, out of Indianapolis, one of two offers this week. The other one, Jackson Hayes, a power forward out of Ohio that Brad Underwood offered. And again, if you missed the beginning of the show, Ayo Dosunmu had a monster game last night, 42 points, was 16-21 from the field, and also had 8 assists and 7 boards in an AAU tournament for the Mac Urban Fire out in Las Vegas. And he is just I watched the highlight tape, and he's just a lot of fun to watch, and I'd love to see him. He wore orange because Mac Urban Fire wears orange. I'd like to see that here. How about you?
We're really going to sweat him out. Now, I think Illinois was in great shape a month ago, 2 months ago, three months ago. I think that even though Xavier got in first, Illinois was right there, and Chin Coleman was, of course, on top of that all the way. And now you're going to have to buck the senior teams in the country.
Think about the backcourt of Trent Frazier, Mark Smith, Tijon Lucas, Ayo Dosunmu. I mean, that's just
have some passers.
Oh, what a lot of fun! That would be a lot of fun to watch. You can go from not having much of a backcourt the last several years. You know, Will mentioned no point guard until you got Tijon Lucas, who was just coming off of a major injury, so he's really just getting into his own now. To go from that to this, what a tremendous change that would be for the Illini men's basketball team. One other college basketball note before we take a timeout and bring in Thaddeus Ward. Mitchell Robinson, he was Western Kentucky's prized freshman recruit, a very highly ranked player. He went to Western Kentucky. He's left campus after attending summer classes and attending practices. And really, I think the obvious thing here is that the lead recruiter for him, Shimon Williams, who's also his godfather, has since resigned from his job as an assistant on that staff. And
the only place he can play this season is Western Kentucky.
Yes, that's correct.
So if he goes somewhere else, he's going to have to sit out a year.
Yeah.
And it's going to make him think twice, but because he can go back to Western Kentucky right now. Mm-hmm. But he had 2 weeks of school, right?
Yeah, he cleaned out his dorm already from what I read yesterday. I'm
right,
not sure that
right.
is.
He's gone, but I mean, yeah. I mean, the guy's going to have to do second thoughts, either that or go to Europe and play, maybe.
Which he can play overseas, and then he'd be in the NBA draft. He was, you know, I don't know if that's a good idea for him, but he's left campus, and it's hard to get a kid that's that highly rated to Western Kentucky. And when his godfather and assistant on the staff leaves, what do you think he's going to do? I mean, it's
if
really
you're Rick Stansbury. Why'd you let Williams get away?
I don't know the backstory of why he left. I'm not sure. I would love to read more into that, figure out what's going on there. But things are interesting there now, and
yeah,
it's a once in a lifetime opportunity for them to get a player like that, and now they've apparently lost him. We'll take a timeout. We'll bring in Thaddeus Ward, the Illini running backs coach, will join us, get his thoughts on the running back core this year compared to last year. Training camp starts on Monday. He's coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us. 70 degrees at 10:35. That was Illini football coach Lovie Smith talking about Chase Crouch being the starting quarterback this week and Mikey Dudek returning after missing 2 years. We now welcome in the mayor of Libertyville, Thaddeus Ward, the running backs coach for the Illini football team. Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
Good morning. My pleasure. I appreciate you guys for having me on the show.
Not a problem, sir. Well, you've really taken a liking to the mayor of Libertyville, and kind of, you know, who started that on the staff? Was that you just kind of doing that, or did have that take off? I mean, obviously, you spent a lot of time down there in St. Louis and other areas recruiting, but that's kind of taken off here.
Yeah, I mean, Libertyville was something that we, you know, I came up with and just talked about it being a state of mind, and really, well, not just one place. Like right now, it's a beautiful thing. I say it's a beautiful thing in Libertyville right now. So. You know, it's just a state of mind where you are, positive vibes, and, you know, that's kind of how we came about, how it came about. As far as the mayor of Libertyville, somebody actually tweeted, you know, you must be the mayor of Libertyville, and so we just kept that going from there, having fun with it.
Well, Coach, you had a big event last night, the barbecue. I know you can't mention the specific players that were here, but I know it's a big event for you as a coaching staff just to have some of the several players here as you guys continue to work on finalizing that class. Just kind of take us through what goes the event. Obviously, it's a barbecue, but kind of what goes into that event, and it's the planning of it and pulling something like that off.
Yeah, it's a huge event. It's great for us, our families, and actually the prospects and their families to have a chance to come here on campus, get around our families, see who we really are as people. Sometimes, you know, it's just recruiting, but they get a chance to hang around with their families and see how all of our father came, and a man and how we all work and stuff as well. So it's always good for them to get around other people and see how you get around with your family. And so the event was, we started planning it early, and each year is going to get better and bigger and bigger. Had a great turnout yesterday, and we expect some good things to come about pretty soon.
Coach, we're having a hard time hearing you. I don't know if you're like, it's not cutting out, but it's kind of having a hard time hearing you a little bit.
Yeah, Thad, this is Lauren. Do you think we could call you back on a different number? Are you on a cell phone?
Yes, sir.
Do you have a direct line that we could call you on?
Not. Let me see. Let's move. You gotta help. What about now?
It's a little better now. Yeah.
Any better?
Yeah, that's a little better. Yeah, I think that's a little bit better. Well, what?
A little better.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the training camp. I know that starts on Monday, but the local media day is tomorrow. I kind of went through the Big Ten media day earlier this week, but now training camp is here, and the season's just a few weeks away, and it's kind of hard to believe.
I know it time flies. It seems like, you know, we were just finishing the last year's game, no question. Also, just, you know, with training camp, we're excited to take the next step. Excited to get in the rooms with our guys, to start teaching, and like I said, take that next step. Well, that's what it comes down to, is training camp time. Everybody's going to training camp around this time. We're excited to take the next step.
Well, Coach, let's talk about some of the players. I mean, talk about the progress that Foster has made in the time that you've been here. I mean, before you came here, he was like sixth string or something, fifth or sixth string, you know, way down the line. And he was going to transfer, and then he decided to stay, and he's a different player. Now, talk about the progress that you've seen him make in the time you've been here.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because he was, even my first spring here, I think he finished third or fourth string. And what he did was committed himself to his body. He committed himself to the weight room. you know, better eating habits that really trimmed down his body fat, which enabled him to lose a little weight and to play faster. I tell you what I've seen from him, his growth from last year to now has been, Coach, teach me everything you know. You know, give me everything you know. So now I think you're going to see a smarter player. You're going to see a player who knows the offense inside and out. You're going to see a guy who knows the schemes up front. So he knows what's going on. You know, probably last year he didn't know every blocking scheme that was going on. Now he's in tune to what's going on up front and everything that's going on the offense now. From run games and a passing game.
What's the status of Dre Brown in your plan right now? He's missed the last two seasons with knee injuries. Where's he stack up?
Yeah, we're excited to get my hands on Dre. He was, my first spring here, he was having a great training camp, and unfortunately, he had a little hiccup there. But we're looking forward to getting him here in training camp and get my hands on, like we said, and just seeing where he is and how far he's coming. I think we're going to see a good product on the field from Dre Brown here pretty soon.
Who's the best? Who's the best running back coming out of the backfield and taking passes on the? In your opinion,
They all have their little, they all have their little advantages and things they do better. But I would say, they I don't know. They all have a pretty good job of doing that. We use, Reggie last year in that capacity, Reggie Corbin.
Yeah.
But I also think. That Kendrick does a great job of receiving the ball out of the backfield as well. So we try to stretch our guys to be multiple and be, first, third down guys. And I think, you'll see that from multiple guys this year in the backfield.
Thaddeus Ward joining us on Sports Talk here on DWS. He's the running backs coach for the Illini football team, is entering his second season on the staff. Well, a running back out of Ohio, Ravon Bonner. What do you expect from him? There's more depth this year than last year due to the injuries that we've referenced. It certainly didn't have much of a depth in terms of experience at the running back position last year. Got a little bit more this year. But is Ravon Bonner guy going to get much action this year? Are you going to try to hold him back because of the strength of numbers in front of him?
Yeah, that's what we're interested to see. I think those guys, we expect those guys to come in and play and try to contribute early, come in and compete. That's going to be interesting this fall camp. That's why I'm so excited to really now really have a chance to work with them on the field, and really get our hands on the field. And I think time will tell. But I think, from the top stage, we'll expect him to come in and compete right away for playing time.
Well, as you look at the quarterback position this year compared to last year, West Lunt was not a very mobile quarterback. Chase Crouch is. He, of course, is the starter. How does that change for your running backs and what they need to do to help keep Chase upright? Because I know that the concern there is the injuries, because Chase isn't afraid of anything. What are your running backs, and what are you telling them to help keep Chase healthy?
Well, our mission statement is, as a running back, to protect the football and to keep our quarterback healthy, to protect the quarterback. And so that's the first thing we teach them when they come in. Here's our mission statement. Protect the football and keep our quarterback healthy. And that's part of, I think Chase brings a lot to the table. I love his leadership. I'm excited. Chase is a guy who's very competitive, who loves, he's a gym rat. He is what you're looking for in a starting quarterback. We're excited to see what he's going to bring to the table. I think, you may even see some boxes, cleaner boxes to run in because of Chase. But we're looking forward to him being able to lead this team as far as we can go.
I got to ask you about Mike Epstein because he's coming up from Florida and played on an outstanding team down there, was a star player for that team. And as right. you and everybody will notice, he is a white running back, which when I bring that up, people criticize me. But we haven't had a good, really, white running back here since George Yurimovich, which is way before your time. You weren't even born yet. But but really, I mean, have you seen enough of him to know whether he can help?
I think he's going to help. I think he's going to come in here and compete right away to be a guy. And help us win this year. You know, I think the world of Mike. You know, I was part of recruiting Mike this year, and Mike has a great family, but Mike's going to bring a lot to the table. You know, as far as being able to run the ball, he can catch the ball out of the backfield, and I think he's also a guy who can take it to distance as well. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people, which is good for us.
But would you how many running backs would you kind of plan on using as you start out the season in the course of a game, let's say?
Yeah, well, that's interesting you say that because we talked about, you know, trying to incorporate all of our guys into the game really early into the game. And then they know whether you're the starter or you're the backup, you know, whoever has the hot hand. We're looking for that guy who has the hot hand. That's the guy that's going to play. But, you know, Kendrick's our starter. They all know that coming into camp, that's where we start. But those guys are going to compete. And going into the games, we try to get them all out in the games. They all have their roles and what they do best. And so we try to get them out there early and let them get out there in the game. And then the hot hand will stay and play the longest. That's kind of how it works, and that's the way it should work.
Which of those guys is going to be on special teams as a returner? Both maybe as a punt returner or as a kickoff returner?
I think you can see all of those guys, truthfully, back returning kicks and punts. You know, from Mike, Rayvon, they've all done it in high school. You know, Rayvon had a 99-yard kick return. So Rayvon's returning kicks, Mike's returning kicks, Reggie and Kendrick. And so I think you can see that from multiple guys this year. That's what the running back, you know, improving your depth. You know, you should better improve your depth and quality on special teams as well because you expect those guys to be able to help and contribute on special teams as well.
I ask you a tough question. What happened with Vaughn? What was the, you know, a year ago he was one of the Illini who went to the Big Ten meetings. He was very highly regarded. I think Lovie had a lot of great things to say about Vaughn. And it just looked like he didn't hit the holes the way Foster did. I mean, that's, you know, from where I'm looking. What happened there?
Yeah, that's an easy question. You just really said the answer, you know, to be truthful. And you know, I just think that over time that Kendrick, you know, won the position and he outright, you know, just went and took the position. And so what we said and what that shows is that a guy who finishes spring practice as a fourth tailback, if you work hard and you continue to improve, that the best man will play. No matter where you start off, all right, you may have started off being the media day guy, or you may have started off being the fourth string at the beginning of the camp. Well, the best players that give us at University of Illinois the best chance to win will play. And so that's what it shows for us.
Illini running backs coach Thaddeus Ward. Coach, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. And Illini fans, if you don't follow him on Twitter, it's follow him at WardTH09. This guy is entertaining on Twitter. Probably one of the – I don't usually put the Twitter handles out for coaches, but you're in a different realm by yourself there, Coach.
I appreciate it. Appreciate you guys. Like I said earlier, having me on the show. Enjoy it.
We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Thanks, Coach. Bye. That is Illini running backs coach Thaddeus Ward joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Still some time for you to call, 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Got a few texts to get to in a moment. But a couple of Illini news and notes here. Former Illini football quarterback Wes Lunt was cut by the Minnesota Vikings yesterday. They added a linebacker, so Wes Lunt no longer a member of the Minnesota Vikings. And it's going to be difficult for him to make an NFL roster, Lauren, but it's not totally surprised that he was cut because I didn't know if he'd make – I guess see how Teddy Bridgewater does, but not a great opportunity to play there anyway.
Well, they're going to go from 90 to 53. There's going to be a lot of Illini cut.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some.
You know, that's a lot of people being cut. 1,200?
Yeah, 1,200 guys
will be cut On one day.
Yep.
That's, right before the start of the season.
Boy, that's a large number. And we mentioned at the top of the show, Malcolm Hill in his first game in the Philippine Basketball Association. He plays for the Pure Food Star Hotshots of that league. He had 28 points and 11 rebounds in his first game. Here's Malcolm Hill in an interview right after the game yesterday, courtesy of Sports 5 out there in the Philippines.
I'm joined by beta player of the game from the Star Hotshots, Malcolm Hill, with 28 points, double-double performance, 11 rebounds. Congratulations. Tell me about your first day at the office. The trust that you got from your teammates, it seems like you guys gel so much together, like you've been playing for so long when you've actually been here barely for a week.
Yeah, I've been here for about 4 days with the guys, but you know, when I signed my contract, the coach let me know right away he wants me to be really aggressive and help lead the team. You know, he doesn't care that I just graduated, that I'm 21, and you know, I'm glad I was able to do that. Today was awesome. I mean, the support I have from, you know, the coaches, the players, and the fans were just amazing.
First three quarters, you did tremendous. But in the fourth quarter, there must be something that made you like, I will take over. You scored 12 in the fourth quarter.
I mean, yeah, that's just how I am. You know, I was the third leading scorer at Illinois. You know, the past 3 years I've been playing basketball, my role has been to take over the game. You know, I want to carry that to my professional level, too. So I just made sure, you know, I just made the right plays for the team, and, you know, I got my shots to fall today.
Elaborate on the love that you got from the fans.
And it was great. You know, the fan support I've had, you know, at all levels of the game, you know, I've just been very, very blessed. You know, the fans that I've had at Belleville East, University of Illinois, and now the fan support I have here for Hot Shots, you know, it's fun. You know, I'm really excited for the season.
Shout out?
Shout out to my mom, dad, family, and Jeremiah Radford. This is for you.
Okay, that's Malcolm Hill, former Illini, third all-time leading scorer at the University of Illinois, a monster game in his first game in the Philippine Basketball Association, 28 points and 11 rebounds.
21 years old.
Yeah.
He's a year young. He should be a senior in college this year.
Yeah. He said that. I had forgotten. I knew he was very young. But
he's a year young.
Yeah, 21 years old. So good luck to him as he was with the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Summer League. And worked his way through there. He played sparingly down in Orlando. The kind of one highlight he had was the buzzer beater in the corner to end one of the quarters down there in Orlando. And for the most part, he only played sparingly for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Let's get some text messages here on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. This is from Bill. The powerful, all-knowing NCAA had no problem taking away Lou Henson's wins. What did he do? And, of course, that's something you know really well.
It took 18 wins.
Yep, and lack of institutional control is what they did there. And you know,
for a player who was an academic problem before he got there. You know, I mean, it was his first year there. He won 18 games the first year there, and he lost them all.
Yep. So that's from Bill in the Castle.
That's when he went back, of course, back to New Mexico State from Illinois.
Yeah, of course, they had the issues here at Illinois in the late 80s, early 90s with the Deion Thomas recruitment. And I believe it was lack of institutional control is what the NCAA handed down. Is that correct for the Deion Thomas?
I think that they wound up saying, even though – you didn't. How do I say it right? They didn't get. They were basically found not guilty. I mean, Jimmy Collins was basically found not guilty, but they said just because we found him not guilty didn't mean he didn't do something.
Right.
Something like that. You know.
Yeah. Still a touchy subject for Illini fans, and I won't mention the coach's name who's still somehow coaching in the NCAA who upsets.
At Auburn.
Yeah, at Auburn. That's all I'll say. We'll leave it at that. You know, Illinois beat him in 2005 in the tournament, so that was nice to see. Benny texts in, I'm not in favor of beer being served at college football games, and the Bears played at Memorial Stadium. I saw too many fans intoxicated at games. Well, Benny, I don't know if you go to Illini football games, but people tailgate, especially when the game is an afternoon kickoff, a night game, which we have some of those this year. You're going to see plenty of intoxicated fans at Illini football games as well. All of them, just the people who are tailgating. You know,
but Will Leach said something that's accurate. The fans that attend Illinois football games are different from the – there's a different culture that attends the Bears games. It's just way different.
Well, the college atmosphere is completely different whether it's football or whether it's basketball because you get it's heavy students – well – sometimes not here, but maybe at basketball games. But you know, down in the SEC, that conference, there's a lot of students. There's a lot of the general public there as well. But you know, it's just a completely different environment for college athletics at football games.
Those Bears fans were unruly.
Yeah, I did not come to. I wasn't living here then.
It was bad.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
But, I mean, that's what you get.
Yep, it definitely is. Benny also texts in, playing Alabama, I'd rather play the big schools in non-conference play before going into conference play. That's Benny on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Again, the barbecue last night, Coach Thaddeus Ward couldn't mention the players that were here. Just want to reference Luke Ford was here once again, visiting for the barbecue last time for the Illinois football team. He's ranked really high across the country. He's the number two tight end in all of high school football. Illinois still in on him, 4-star, 6'7", 247 pounds, and what an ideal player that would be, Lauren, if they could find a way to keep him in state.
At a position that we haven't had a lot of production out of lately.
And I think that probably is partially because they haven't had talented enough players there at a high level.
It takes an
lately.
It takes an awfully good player to be a tight end, because you got to be able to block like a tackle and receive like a receiver. That's a tough combination. There aren't many, but when you get one that's good, I mean, it makes a big difference.
It really does. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to Tom Deanhart, Brad Dancer, Will Leach, and Thaddeus Ward. Thanks so much for your phone calls and text as well. Thanks to Ed Bond for producing today's show in place of Evan Kahn. We'll be back next week to do it again. Training camp gets underway Monday, so plenty of Illini football coverage coming up for the next several months. Lauren Tate, thanks to you as well. Central Illinois Business is up next here on DWS.